What you believe at the age of 13 will most likely be the very same thing that you believe when you die. A more startling fact is that the things that are shaping the way that you view the world, it's not what you think. Hey, it's Lucas Crobot, and you're listening to the Lucas Crobot Show, where we uncover purpose, pursue truth, and own the future. Today, we are talking about the way that we view the world and what is shaping the way that you view the world and the coming generations will view the world. As I said in the intro, the way that we view the world is more or less solidified by the time that we were 13. Now, decades ago, that number was a little older. Before, it used to be we'd be about 25 by the time our worldview was solidified, and then it moved to 18 to 15, and now it's hovering between the ages of 13 and 14. That's right. The seeds that have been instilled in us from the ages of 0 to 13, the imprints, the ideas that have been impressed upon our minds are the things that will take hold. And the rest of our life from 13, 14 onwards is more or less a process of confirmation bias, of building upon the basic framework of belief that we have adopted from a young age. That part of that comes from genetic disposition, I'm sure, and part of it comes from the environment that we grow up in. Actually, a large part of it comes from the environment that we grow up in. But exactly what part of the environment? Is it our school? Is it our peer group? Is it our parents? Is it the systems that we grow up in, whether they're socialistic or capitalistic? Is that what is shaping our worldview, the things that we believe, the way that we see the world around us? Now, of course, there are exceptions to the rule. There are outliers, people who in their late teens, 20s, 30s, 40s even, have a change of worldview. They have something that disrupts their life so violently that they overturn many of the beliefs and the systems that they held true for so long. But this is rare. It is not the norm, but it is an exception to the norm. The real question that we're going to be digging into on today's episode is who exactly is shaping that worldview? Who exactly is shaping the way that you and your children will end up viewing the world? Most of us would like to think that, well, we self-shape our worlds. We can decide what we want to believe or don't want to believe. Or we think, well, it is the education system. It's education that's the problem. If we can only educate people, if we can only revamp the school system. Some people believe, well, it's government policy. It's government that is shaping the way that people view the world and operating through the world. Others, well, it's the parents. The parents are having a huge influence on the upbringing of the world around them. Some, it's the peers, your friends are shaping the way that you view the world. But guess what? There is actually data. There is studies that have been done that says, what are the greatest shapers of at least Western society? Now, this study was done by the Barnum Group. They measured the impact on individuals, on society, based on the amount of time contact points that the different industries or different spheres had on people and the amount of money that was spent on these things. Because the things that we spend our time on, the things that we spend our money on, is an indicator of where we put value and an indicator of what is actually shaping the way that we view the world or operate within the world or value inside of the world. So they broke it down, this study broke down the significant sources of influence on American culture. So we're speaking specifically about American culture, but I think it can be extrapolated most likely, with exceptions, I'm sure, to Western culture. And then beyond that, as we look into the rest of the world and Asia, Africa subcontinent, we can begin to see that a lot of the same trends of behavior is beginning to happen among the youth. And I suspect that over the coming decades, we will see that these sources of influence on global culture will remain similar or the same across cultures due to globalization and due to digitalization across the globe. So they split it up into three tiers: a top tier, middle, and bottom tier of influence in society. In the top tier of influence, they cited movies, television, music, and books, followed by social media and internet as being the top five influences on American culture. Underneath that, still in the first tier, was law and public policy or government. And then below that was the family and the parents. So the greatest influence, it is movies, TV, media, social media, followed by some policy, and then followed by parents. So the laws that are set in place, the policies that are set in place by a nation, important to shaping culture. The family and the parents, they still have a significant impact on the culture that is set within a family and within the nation of America. But above that, we see it is all media. It is the media that children are consuming that's shaping the way that they view the world. When you go on to the second tier, you'll see that it's school, then print media and video games, friends or peers, followed by large corporations, Coca-Cola, Disney, and affinity groups. Who's your friend groups? Who are you like? Your broader circles, not your immediate friends, but those broader circles of affinity. In the bottom tier, you'd have non-nuclear families, so your extended cousins. You'd have promotional events, protest events, live theaters, advertising, literature, and then finally your local church or the religious sphere of society. So what is shaping culture? Is it school? Yeah. Is it corporations? Is it big business? Not really. Is it your extended family? No. It is media. As I said, your mileage may vary culture to culture. I suspect that here in the Middle East, media still plays a large role, but I suspect that religion still has a huge impact on culture. I suspect that government has a larger impact, family has a larger impact, but we still see the way that they measured this study was touch points spent from children on these different spheres. Where's the most time exposure? And we can see here in the Gulf, in the subcontinent, the time exposure that kids have to media across the globe now is exorbitant. For instance, by the time a child is 14 years old, they will have consumed, on average, 18,000 hours of media. Been exposed to 18,000 hours of media. That is equivalent to 6.2 years of 8 hours a day on media. By the time you're 14, 6.2 years, 8 hours a day of media saturation. That is mind-boggling. By the time the normal American is 18, that number jumps from 18,000 contact hours or consumption hours of media to 33,000. That is nearly 12 years of 8 hours a day consuming media. Now, as I said, this is America, but what about the rest of the world? Maybe other cultures are different. Well, yes, but in 2011, in UAE, the National News published an article saying that a team led by Mahboud Hamshi surveyed 638 UAE nationals from the ages of 16 to 25 at schools and universities. They said that almost half of the young Emiratis are addicted to the internet and spend nearly 10 hours a day on social and other media. a new survey suggests. They say that young people live a highly mediated existence, spending more than 9.9 hours on average a day with media, more time than they spend sleeping, and they spend twice as much time on the internet as watching TV, according to researchers. Now, when we drop down into the lower ages, I'm sure that number drops from 10 hours a day to something smaller. But still, if you're at 3, 4, 5 hours a day when you're in your early teen years from 8 to 12, that is going to have a significant impact. What are you watching? What are those kids listening to? It doesn't take much observation to see that parents are using screens as babysitters. All you have to do is go to a mall and see how many kids have a screen glued in front of their face as their parents are shopping. Because our media consumption is not going down. It is increasing. Here are some startling facts on media consumption in the West. Adults spend more than 11 hours a day. This is from the Nielsen report in 2018. Teenagers spend an estimated of 10 hours a day on screens. Tweens, 6 to 7 hours a day absorbing media. 8 to 10-year-olds are spending about 5 hours a day with media. And the typical 18-year-old will have been exposed to over 32,000 hours of media content, and it's increasing. But what does all of this mean? What does this mean? What impact does this have on culture? Well, we see that in the West, that there has been a huge shift from traditional values to what I'm calling social media values. We have shifted in American culture from valuing hard work, civic duty, humility, living in moderation, the importance of family and faith, the rule of law, obeying the rule of law, frugality, living within our means, and living simple lives. Those were the traditional American values. But it has changed. If you look in modern American culture today, we see that the values have drastically shifted to values that have been promoted on social media, on TV, on reality TV, in movies. And what is that? It is comfort, living for experiences, for feelings, having an expression, expressing ourselves in a way that makes us feel free. Rather than humility, we just want to be expressive. Happiness, not moderation. We want to be happy. I want to do what makes me feel good. Independence. I don't want to be bound to my family values. I'm going to do what I want to do. Forget my parents. Entitlement. I'm entitled to things. The world owes me something. Control. Acceptance. And freedom. Not simplicity, frugality, or obeying the rule of law. It's I want to be in charge. I am king of my own world, and I will do what I want. It's anarchy. And we see that these are the values that have been pushed, impressed across media platforms. Whether intentionally or unintentionally, it doesn't matter. These are the values that the new generation, the coming generation, Generation Z, and even the millennial generation have adopted, have embraced. Now, we could say, well, what? Come on, Lucas, what's so bad with that? I mean, everyone wants to be comfortable. We want happiness. I want you to be happy. We should be independent. And yeah, freedom is a good thing. We should all be freedom and independent. And we should express our feelings, not just, you know, bottle them all up, not to live in moderation, not to harness our emotions and use self-control. Instead, I just want to express the way that I feel. Like, why is that so bad? Well, let's look at the effects that this change of value has on society. A majority of adults believe that the following things are now morally acceptable in the West. They believe that divorce is okay. Having a sexual relationship when you're not in a marriage, it's okay. Gambling, yeah, that's fine. If you have sexual thoughts or fantasies about people besides your spouse, nah, that's okay. It's no big deal. It's just in your mind. LGBTQ plus relationships are acceptable. Those LGBTQT relationships should be embraced across the board. Doctor-assisted suicides, acceptable. LGBT identity, acceptable. Cohabitation, living together outside of a married relationship, totally fine. Having a child without the parents being married, that's fine. And we see it in the stats. We see that it's not just people accepting these things, but people have begun to live in this sort of lifestyle. Now, again, to play the devil's advocate, well, Lucas, why not? Why not live in these type of lifestyles? What's so wrong with thinking that gambling's okay, or having promiscuous relationships, or having a child outside of marriage? Times are changing, values changing. We're becoming more open-minded and more accepting. Isn't it good that we're becoming more tolerant and more loving to people that are in the LGBTQ community? Isn't this a good thing? Why are you coming down hard on those who decide not to get married traditionally? What's wrong with this? Well, let's talk about that. What effects do these things have on society? What is the cascading effect? As you can see, it's like a domino that has been pushed. The first one was, all of a sudden we have this inundation of media, and media begins to shape and transform the minds of a new generation, replacing traditional values with a new set of values, a set of values that is exalting the self, and rather than teaching and putting on a pedestal a value of restraint and moderation and self-control, it is saying, let your feelings run rampant. Do what you want. Be happy at all costs. From that, we see the next step, which is there's a massive change in the way that people believe other things in life. When it comes to the traditional family values are malleable and they're accepting that, we're seeing a spike in kids that are born outside of wedlock. And what is the effects of those? Well, we talked about this actually just a few episodes ago. In episode 193 with Robert Henderson, he came on the show and he talked about how family values being destroyed, how the uncertainty that happens in kids' lives between the ages of 0 and 5 is the greatest predictor of further violence in their life, of being arrested in their life, of putting themselves in a risky situation when they're in their teens. It's further evidence. There's evidence saying that if you do not have a stable childhood, you will grow up to not be a trusting person. You won't trust your friends. You won't trust the government. You won't trust the relationships that you have around you. Is this a positive thing that we want in culture? Do we want to sow seeds of mistrust and doubt in culture? Do we want to sow seeds in the next generation's life to have a chaotic young adulthood that's only going to breed more destruction? Is this what we want? Here's a clip from Robert Henderson.
What are the predictors of sort of juvenile delinquency, criminal behavior, teen pregnancy, sort of doing risky things that could get you hurt or in trouble? And so the two key things they were looking at, one was environmental harshness, what they called environmental harshness, which is essentially low socioeconomic status. How much money do you have? How much money does your family have? The other question, or the other factor they were looking at, was environmental unpredictability, which is basically measured as how many different kinds of family structures you lived in your childhood. How many divorces, how many different homes, how many sort of marriages and remarriages and so on that you sort of go through, or foster homes in my case, I guess. And what they found was that the latter, this sort of unpredictability, that kind of disorder and chaos in early childhood, is, you know, much stronger predictor of, you know, later criminal behavior and getting into trouble, getting hurt than poverty, which I think might surprise some people. I think we talk a lot about poverty in society, but we very rarely talk about stability and care and security for young children. And I think this is what's going on, you know, this sort of broader question of what's going on in the US and maybe in Western society more broadly is the breakdown of the family. In a situation where you don't have, you know, a stable two-parent family, you don't, I think it's harder to learn to trust people. It's harder to sort of learn early on how to establish and build relationship, have that sort of sense of safety and emotional connection and that willingness to be vulnerable that, you know, children can have when they have a secure and stable home environment. But, you know, fewer and fewer people have that. And I think this is giving rise to a lot of the cynicism and the nihilism that we're seeing now.
And I believe Robert is right. This is a leading factor of the rise in cynicism and nihilism in this generation, the breakdown of the family unit. So you might ask yourself, or you might ask me, well, why are these liberal values? Why is this open-mindedness and this tolerance towards things that directly impact the stability of the family, especially if you believe that the stability of the family or a family unit is something to be looked down on, is an oppressive function of the patriarchal society. You can believe that, and you can say that. But the problem is that when these ideas are implemented, when there is a breakdown of the family unit, does it leave the next generation in a better place with better mental health, with better options on the table for employment, with stronger and more healthy relationships, more trusting? Or does it lead to more chaos and destruction in their lives? And the studies would show, the data would show that it's the latter. And so if we want to win the war against nihilism, if we want to stem the tide that is destroying this generation of suicide, rising suicide rates, rising depression and anxiety rates, then we must begin with the youth. We must begin at a young age, and we must begin with media, because it is media that is shaping the hearts, the minds, and the lives of the next generation. One thing that should worry us even more is the understanding that Europe is about 20 years ahead of where America is. So we look at the state of Europe, and then we can look at America and say, okay, in 20 years or 30 years, this will be this more or less the cultural status, the litmus test, the environment that America will be in about 20 years. And now I suspect that the Middle East and the subcontinent are probably another 20 or 30 years behind America. So when we look at what's happening currently today in culture, what's happening right now across the Middle East, North Africa, Africa, the subcontinent, that is an image of what was taking place 25 years ago, what was being cemented into the minds of children 20 to 25 years ago. The same goes with the States. What we're seeing right now in America, that is a snapshot of the seeds that were being planted 25 years ago, 30 years ago. There's such a lag in the measuring. So now, this is where I think there's cause for concern. Where there's cause for concern is the question of what is being sown, the thoughts, the ideas, the framework that's being sown into this generation, not just in America, but here in the Khalij, here in Saudi Arabia, in Oman, in UAE, in Kuwait, in India, in Turkey, in Palestine, in Lebanon, in Egypt. What ideas, what frameworks are being sown into the mind of the youth, because it is no longer religion or the family or the government that is having the greatest number of hours of touch point and contact point with the youth in this region, but it is the mobile phone, it is the screen, and they are getting access to not just local content, but global content, Western content that we can already see has had a great effect at shaping this current generation. And we know that that was happening 20 years ago when there really wasn't as much access to continuous contact of media. So what is going to happen in 20 or 30 years? What will 2050 look like in the Middle East? Don't go away. We will be right back with our closing segment from Weaver and Loom. Welcome back to Weaver and Loom, the part of the show where we take ancient wisdom, ancient quotes, and we weave it in with our everyday lives so that we can own our futures and weave our destinies. I love the image of a weaver and a loom. In ancient mythology, a loom always represented fate. It represented destiny. And oftentimes you'd see a picture of one of the gods or goddesses weaving the fate of men and weaving a tapestry together, a story together where each thread is a person's life. And each life is woven together with high complexity with the rest of people across the world. But what I love about the Weaver and Loom too is that you and I have an ability by the choices that we make to weave our destiny, by the things that we believe, to own our future, by the things that we teach our children. We can impact generation after generation after generation by the way that we live. Because even though I believe that it is God who ultimately writes our destiny and our purpose for our life, there is still a level of you and I making choices and acting upon those choices, acting upon the things that we believe. That our destiny may have been written in the stars already, but it's up to you and I to actually take action on that. It's up to you and I to actually follow that roadmap, to follow that purpose that has been placed within our hearts to fulfill our destiny rather than to squander our destiny. Today's quote is from Edwin Paxton Hood. Now, Edwin was born in London, October 24th in 1820, and he was self-educated. He was a poet, an author, an independent minister, a biographer, a great man of learning and writing. And he wrote this: "Be as careful of the books you read as of the company you keep, for your habits and character will be as much influenced by the former as the latter." I thought this quote was particularly applicable to this episode, where, yes, we have to be careful of the books we read, but we also have to be careful of the company we keep, the habits we form and make, because that will become our character. And right now, a large portion of the company that we keep is not physical company. It's not necessarily the people that we're spending time with face to face, but it's the company that we keep, the voices that we listen to online, the accounts that we subscribe to, the way that we spend our time. Because increasingly, you and I are building and forming relationship and company with people in the digital world. So my suggestion to you, and my suggestion for as you think about your children, maybe your future children, is what are the books that you want them to read? And more importantly, what is the company that you want them to keep? What is the exposure to media that you want them to have? And to what media do you want them to be exposed? Because that media will end up having a greater influence on their life than you will as a parent. But if you can shape the media that they consume, then you can have a greater impact to lead your children and the coming generations to have a better, healthier, and fuller life. That is all for this episode. If you enjoy this, if these thoughts are provoking, share it with a friend, share it with a spouse, share it with someone that you know will appreciate it. Because whenever someone sends me an episode and shares something with me, I always feel so loved and appreciated. And I'm sure they will too. Finally, remember, if you have a question, please WhatsApp me at +1202-922-0220. And I will answer it right here on the show. And if you ask a question that gets answered, I will send you stickers. I'll send you some sweet stickers that you can use for free. Finally, remember, go out, seek truth, and own your future.